You're listening to Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz.
Indeed, it's time for Audio Culture, and we are lucky enough to have Adam Gifford in the building today. How are you doing, Adam?
Kia ora tātou.
Well, it's so lovely to have you here, e hoa. We're talking about the Māori Community Centre, which is quite epic. I had no knowledge of this before reading your piece. What is the Māori Community Centre?
So back in the 1940s, there'd been 100,000 American troops in camps all around the country, including about 1,500 on Victoria Park. And part of the service buildings for that, there was one that was lying empty after the war. And Peter Fraser, the Prime Minister at the time, and also the Māori Affairs Minister, said, let's use this for the Māori who are starting to move to Auckland. Because, of course, when they were demobilised, a lot of the Māori men said, I'm not going back to the village, I'm not going to milk cows, I'm going to stay in Auckland, stay in Tāmaki. And so there was that huge movement, what we call urbanisation. So from a Māori population of about 4,500, mostly, you know, Ngāti Whātua, Waikato, Tainui, suddenly by 1960s, there was, you know, 35, 40, 50,000. And now, of course, we're the largest Māori city in the world.
Oh, where?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And so, yeah, it was a place they sort of said, okay, we'll designate this. And, you know, the first few months, it was a committee with, you know, some well-meaning pākehā and churches and this, that and the other. And then it became a Māori institution, like so many of these things happen. It's a place where, you know, you come to town, you can go down there, you can get a kai, you know, boil up everything that you're kind of hungering for. You know, a lot of these people, young people, would have jobs because there was, you know, full employment.
Yeah.
They needed company, then they needed, you know, make connections, and, you know, a taste of home and the music. And, of course, you know, Māori have always brought their music with them. And that was a very important part from the beginning.
Yeah.
First of all, it was the dance bands, because, you know, it was a big jazz band thing. And then as rock and roll came and people started going to rock and roll venues, the management said, oh, we better start doing this as well. So they started doing these rock and roll dances. And when you look at the, if you go to the old newspapers of Auckland Star on the Friday nights and so on, they'd have a sort of thing saying who is going to be playing at the Māori Community Centre that weekend.
Wow.
And it's just the list of everyone and the talent quest. You can sort of see, you can see people as they kind of start making their name and they, you know, maybe win a talent contest. And a lot of names you never heard of again. A lot of names that you see that actually went on to achieve some fame in other areas of their lives.
Wow.
And not music. So it's that sort of social history snapshot. So when I was writing the story, the problem, of course, is you're writing about something that's 60, 70 years old,
yeah.
So who knows? I mean, my only memory that I can attribute to being related to Māori Community Centre in its heyday was when I was 5 years old living in the bottom of Freeman's
Wow.
Bay. And two doors long from us, we were about the only Palangi family in the area, I think, and two doors long from us was a woman called Betty Walk, who became known as a sort of champion of looking after kind of homeless kids and so on. I remember her, I was good friends with her son, and I remember her with her friends sitting on the front porch making these little square flax baskets, which they used to put the hangis in for the centre dancers. And they're just sitting there and talking and chatting and then throwing them behind their shoulders in a big pile of these things.
Wow.
So, you know, that's kind of, yeah.
It's pretty epic. So remind us again, where was this situated in Tamaki Makaurau?
Okay, so if you're driving towards the Harbour Bridge, opposite where Vodafone is now, there's now Thornton's or something, an accounting firm, just right opposite the grandstand there at Victoria Park.
Oh, really?
And so that corner there was like this mustard corrugated iron side warehouse. You know, had been a sort of a storage for the Americans, and it was in there. And you know, there's a bunch of rooms. And it's just a dance floor of sorts and stage. And they had tables outside, and you know, people big on the weekends. So, you know, people would come down there, they'd spend the whole weekends there, they'd be playing sport. You know, there's always all the rugby and teams and netball teams and so on. There's a tennis courts that they had the use
yeah.
of.
Yeah, one of my favourite anecdotes was talking about the tennis player who went to Wimbledon.
Yeah.
I didn't
yeah.
even know, what was her, I'll look it up right now. This is amazing. There's so many good little side anecdotes in this piece that are so informative.
Yeah, she only died a couple of years ago, actually. Wonderful career from Rotorua, yeah. Ooh, bless you.
Yeah. I'm coming back off illness, but I'm here. I'll find her name after the song. Should we play Say Mama by
Say Mama. So you look back in things, and there's some bands that basically had residencies and then they moved on up the road. So, you know, the early 50s, so mid-50s, sorry, Kyle Isles. So it was a band basically from Cook Islands, Freddie Kyle and his people. They kind of had a residency there. And this is their hit on... It was actually a big hit, I think, a reasonable hit on Tanza.
Say, Mama, can I go out tonight? Say, Mama, will it be all right? They've got a rockin' party going down the street. Say, Mama, can't you hear that beat? Whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah, say, Mama, don't you look that way.
And of course, they were from the Kyle families in the Cook Islands. And in fact, I met Freddie Kyle sort of years later. He went back to Rarotonga and was running the radio station back there.
How cool. So if you're just tuning in, this is Audio Culture. We're talking to Adam Gifford about the Māori Community Centre, which was a special space that opened in the 40s. Mm. That was literally the community centre for Māori.
It was. And also, you know, a lot of the incoming Pacifica migrants as well, and so they'd sort of have those bands in. Another big star in the early days was Tony Williams in the rock and roll before he moved up the road to the Gandhi Centre. So if you think of Victoria Park, you know, you've got the Gandhi Centre just up as you head towards TVNZ. That was another venue back in those years. So people would sort of go from there and then they'd go up to the Gandhi and then they'd go to some of those other... The Trades Hall, the Jive Centre, those kind of places.
The Jive Centre. We need Johnny to bring Devlin. These names back. The Jive Centre is so cool. Yeah. Well, there's a massive kind of alumni list of amazing people who performed here. And by the way, Ruia Morrison was the name of the tennis player who went to Wimbledon twice. Mm. And in the story you're talking about, the Māori Community Centre was like, we fundraised for her to go there, which is incredible.
And they fundraised for Kiri Te Kanawa to go to England and study music. Yeah. So lots of fundraising went on. I mean, you look at these things and it's like the Koronehana, which of course is a big thing now and self-funding. Yeah. But back then they would fund that by having concert parties at the Māori Community Centre.
That is incredible. And like... I strongly encourage you all to go check out this amazing article because there's some great pictures up in here. You got a picture of the Quintickies looking sharp, young, and like they're having the time of their lives.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the people I mentioned there is a guy called Eddie Howell, who I've written about previously and before I met him, and I actually tracked him down for this story. And he had a couple of years as a bit of a rock and roll star, recorded for Zodiac, went on tour with the Howard Morrison Quartet, ended up by being a member of the quartet. He did the support act, and then he did the Benny Levin still only gave him one paycheck. And at the end of the Howard didn't treat him well, and at the end of the tour, Howard said, you know, stay on and be a member of the quartet. And he said, no thanks, mate.
Wow,
it's not fun anymore.
And I'm turning down the Howard Morrison Quartet.
Went off and worked in the board mills.
Wow.
The sort of trajectory of, let's say, it was a fun place to be and a safe place to be for people.
That's a good point, because one of my favorite parts of reading this was you talking about the aunties in the kitchen. I love the phrasing of it. I'll find it later, but it's...
Oh, well, this is what Bob Harvey actually told me. They'd just be, you know, making sure that the guys didn't come on a bit hard at the girls and so on. And you know, strict no alcohol policy, though, you know, Dover Samuels reckons that they, you know, did get tanked up before he went in after his rugby games.
So good.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's so good. Yeah. Should we play a new track?
Yeah, and the other one, we there's a couple of versions of this. This is by the Quintickies, which is a band that came out. There's one by the Māori High Five, which was the first Māori show band to go overseas, and then the Quintickies a bit later with Rimdi Paul, and, of course, by the mid-60s, the musicians were moving en masse to gigs in Australia where you had that huge entertainment infrastructure.
Oh,
and you
groovy.
Could get, you know, regular work. And they just became... And, you know, people like Charlie Tumahai went there and then ended up in the UK with Bebop Deluxe before coming back to Herb. So, yeah. So this one is, Poi Poi Twist.
Poi Poi Twist. We can hear it in the studio, but unfortunately, I don't think you guys can hear it because nothing is coming up. So we're going to try this. Give me 1 second. I know why. Here we go. This is the Poi Poi Twist by the Quintickies and Rimdi Paul. There we go. There you go. You can enjoy the beautiful tune.
A twist and tune, and you're gonna sing it soon. These are the words to say, boy, boy, twist the night away. It's a Maori melody. Come on along and twist with me, boy, boy, and twist the night away. Yeah. When the band begins to stomp and the kids begin to romp, the girls begin to sway, boy, boy, twist the night away. It's a Maori melody. Come on along and twist with me, boy, boy, and twist the night away, yeah.
Hey,
Wow, what a track, what a track. That was the Poi Poi Twist, Rim Di Por, and the Kentuckys, of course.
And it was quite literally Twist the Night Away, because you look at the ads and they say sometimes in the long holiday weekends, Sunday night, midnight, they'd have Tony Williams or the Carlisles or something, and they'd play till 3. You know?
Wow. And one of my favorite things about this too is there was like an alcohol ban. There was a strict enforced alcohol ban. Of course, people were still having a little alcohol on the side, but... Yeah.
But it's clean, and also, I mean, I did another thing on some, I did another piece on some guys I found, the Sunbeams, who'd played there from when they were 6, 7, 8 years old.
Wow.
And they went through and they became a band, and they started off as a kind of a vocal group, and then they became a band and so on. They all came from Boot Hill up in Oraka there. And they're saying that if things lagged a bit, then the aunties would come out and they'd set up a game, you know, so you just sort of had that thing.
Bring aunties back to the club. Bring aunties back to the club, eh, Adam? I would love to be in a club and, oh, man, how good, so good. So who were the alumni of this beautiful place? Because there's some big names who played here.
Look, every Māori musician you can think of from the era would have been through there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so epic.
Yeah.
How did this all come to an end eventually?
Because I think in the end, changing licensing laws, changing social patterns, and also as people got a bit older, they started buying houses out in Te Aritu or Otara or Manurewa, and it's a long haul back then to get in.
Gentrification.
Modification of those suburbs. So, well, the pepper potting, of course, that was the Māori Fair strategy, was that you would deliberately sort of kind of... You wouldn't just have a Māori area, they'd be all over the place. So they kind of broke down a bit of social cohesion.
Mm.
And obviously we had, Auckland's interesting because of the different responses of different communities to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the West, you kind of end up with Waipareta kind of creating that kind of community thing. Always a lot harder in Central, GI and so on.
Yeah.
But we've ended up with the city we have now. But, yeah, so people moving out, people, and also... The growth of the urban marais. People said, no, I want a marae for my iwi and so on. So, the Ngāpuhi marae, Matatua's and so on. One of the first being Whenakupu with her Catholic marae, and Te Unga Waka. And then Mahurihuri. And as I started to say, Chrissy Panapa and them, I mean, they were part of that. That was part of their childhood. And then they, when they do a fundraiser, that's the pool of musicians they draw on and
awesome.
you so there's been some great nights at Mahurihuri over the years with the same kind of bands,
On a personal note, how much fun did you have writing this piece? Because it seems like you had so much fun.
I did. It's just nice connecting with those people and just, getting those memories from so far back. And, I've been sort of collecting music for a long time, and you sort of have these things and think, where is this? I mean, interestingly, one of the things I found, there's a record which came out in Australia and here, recorded in Australia by a band called the Te Kiwis, and it's like, who are these guys? What's this about? And, there's kind of a funky Sly Stone cover, which the Crate Diggers like. And then I discovered, talking to the Sunbeams, that was the band, that was the Sunbeams. They went to Australia in 1964. Morris Whiteney told me that he was 15 on the plane, had his birthday on the plane, his 15th birthday. And when he landed in Sydney, he was 18 so he could play the clubs. And he said that they go up there and they get themselves a feed of fish and chips and King's Cross. And then they're coming out and there's this big red convertible, American Yank Tank, with Tui Teka, who was out looking for them, knew they were in town. Said, get in the back, boys, get in the car. There's a TV in the back. Takes them out to Bondi, and a club full of Māoris, and sort of says, introduces them around and says, I don't like the name. You're the Te Kiwis from now on.
What?
Yeah, so, that's the, all those little connections, all that whakawhanangatanga that you get, and that sort of, that sort of sense of collective endeavour and celebration of being Māori, which the Māori Community Centre provided for that period of time. It provided that sense of home and that sort of way that you could be somewhere and you didn't have to kowtow to anybody. You could be a Māori.
So all I'm hearing, Adam, is that we need a new Māori Community Centre.
I think we have various sorts, but also...
That's true.
Yeah.
Whiki Fortress. Shout out Whiki Fortress. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you.
Nice talking about it.
Ka pai tō mahi e hoa.
Thank you.
That was Audio Culture.
That was
Audio Culture on 95 BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz. It's just fun.